Edward Palfrey, real.
Four.
When you were performing your duties as a signalman, were you working on a watch system?
As a signal boy, no. One would be on the flag deck from quite early in the day until 4:30, with the exception being the meal time. But later, once I became an ordinary signalman, then I got included in a watch system. Boys, as I recall, weren't expected to do night duties, you know, midnight till four. But once you became an ordinary signalman, you then became a watchkeeper. And you normally, in wartime, much of the watchkeeping in wartime is 4 hours on and 4 hours off. During your 4 hours off, you had to do everything, eat, sleep, shower if you were lucky to find some water. And it was quite punishing at sea, doing that all the time, or so I thought. But I learned in later years that as a yeoman of signals, or a chief yeoman of signals, you don't work in watches, you work forevermore, literally. And I often thought about that. The watchkeepers thought they were hard done by, which they were in wartime. But I think once one went up the scale a bit, life became a bit more tedious.
In addition to your job as a boy signalman on the Norfolk, did you have an action station as well?
Well, my action station normally was on the signal deck. And when action stations were sounded, if you weren't already on duty, everybody went to their action station and stayed there until the event was over. It was particularly punishing, if you like, in northern waters when, and we spent most of the time in northern waters, when a ship goes to dusk action stations and dawn action stations. Now, this is regardless of what you've been doing. So you can imagine if, for example, let's say it's getting dark, shall we say, at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock in the evening, and for the period each side of the dusk, everyone is at action stations keeping a lookout, then if the next thing you are on is midnight till 4, and then you go off at 4 o'clock only to find that it's dawn action stations at 4:45, you don't get much sleep at all that night. People seem to manage to get more sleep in the afternoon. In the afternoon, everybody who's not on duty sleeps in the afternoon.
Shortly after you joined the Norfolk, you were on patrol in the Denmark Straits.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about the conditions on board?
Yes, well, we were there for a number of days. I didn't know exactly why. I don't think anyone knew why. I don't think anyone even knew where we were exactly. But we had been into Valfjord, the anchorage near Reykjavik, the capital, and I think we'd taken on some oil there or something, and then we went out and we went on this Denmark Straits patrol and discovered that soon afterwards HMS Suffolk, a sister ship, joined us, and I don't know that we actually knew what we were there for at first, but eventually we got to know that we were there in case the Germans decided to break out with the Bismarck and Prince Eugen. Well, the weather was atrocious. It was snowing, mist, fog, rain, everything. And it wasn't particularly rough at that stage, as I remember, but it was, everything was being thrown at us weather-wise. And we spent a number of days patrolling that area. I remember, I think it was Suffolk went somewhere to do something a bit further up the coast. Anyway, we joined up with the Suffolk again, and we were patrolling several miles apart between Greenland and Iceland. I think it was the 23rd of May, we were confronted at very short distance, about 6 miles, which isn't very far at sea. We came out of the fog, and the ship sighted these two ships ahead of us. And I didn't see any of the firing that took place. I heard it, but I didn't see any. But suddenly the ship shuddered and started making the smoke and turned hard to starboard. And from then on, I don't remember, the ship stopped vibrating for days and days. It was terrible. But the Bismarck had in fact fired, I think, 5 salvos at the Norfolk. And miraculously, none of them hit. They were quite nearby, and in fact, some larger splinters came on board, and one of the splinters damaged the metal ladder going up to the flag deck, I remember. But then, after that, things sort of quietened down. We went off in one direction, and I'm pleased to say that the Bismarck and Prince Eugen maintained their course and carried straight on.
Were you aware of the identity of those ships? Did you know who they were?
Oh, yes. Yes, we had come to know. I don't know how we learned, but I certainly knew that it was the Bismarck and another ship that was expected to go through the Denmark Straits. And they met us on the evening of the 23rd. I can't remember now whether we had just gone to Exon Stations or whether I was already on the signal deck. I must have been, because I didn't go down for my supper that night until 8:25, which was very late. And I just don't know how we learned. I may have seen it in a signal or something that they were coming through there. But everybody seemed to know who it was.
It was Suffolk who first spotted.
It was Suffolk that actually sighted the Bismarck first. It was one of their lookouts that sighted it first. And she reported to Norfolk, because we were the senior officer. And it was Norfolk who then reported to the CNC Home Fleet and the Admiralty.
Did you send or receive any signals to the Suffolk during the joint pursuit of the Bismarck?
During that time, later I did. I can't remember if I sent any prior to the actual incident or not. But I remember later, after some couple of days later, while Suffolk was still around, she fired on the Bismarck, and the Admiral on board Norfolk sent a signal saying, cease firing and conserve your ammunition. I actually transmitted that one. But there were a number of times when one made this signal or that, and you don't remember. I did my full share.
The Norfolk was in pursuit of the Bismarck over several days.
Yes.
Were you at action stations during that time?
Most of the time we seem to be. I don't remember, and my brother was on board, and I don't remember seeing him to speak to during the 4.5 days involved. He was on manning the pom-poms at the other end of the ship. And I used to see him every day because I had to pass his mess to get to mine. He was an able seaman. Anyway, as regards action station, I seem to remember we were at action stations. It seemed forevermore. I don't remember going to my own mess during that time. I remember that what we lived on was we lived on tins of McConaughey's meat and vegetable stew. I don't remember if they were heated, but they were brought up in tins anyway. I don't remember if we heated them or whether we heated them on the radiator, but that's what we lived on. I don't remember going to the mess at all.
So you were sleeping on signals deck?
Yeah, well, yes. Well, when one is at action stations, you're supposed to remain awake, and one usually does. But when you're at continuous action stations, the chap in charge might say, "Well, you and you go and have a rest for half an hour." And there was a place adjacent to the signal deck with a couple of seats and a couple of bunks where one could have a lay down. But I don't remember details such as that. The thing I remember most about it all is the incessant vibration. Everything was shaking all the time. And I thought, will this ever cease?
Was that because the speed. Keeping speed up?
Yes, that's right. Mm. We would normally be cruising at about 20 or 22 knots, but then we were doing about 31 or 32, and that causes everything to shake.
What do you remember after the Norfolk had been attacked? What happened?
Well, we were at action station for some time, but those who had been on duty and didn't have their meal were sent away to get their supper. I remember we were on sheep's hearts for supper that day. And I remember having about three. I was starving. But as I remember, we spent a lot of time on the signal deck and the bridge area. And we were, of course, quite excited about the prospect of the Hood and Prince Wales joining us soon. We thought they were going to provide some relief, but we were soon in despair because nothing that they were able to do was good enough. And consequently, as you know, the Hood was sunk early, before breakfast the next day.
Where was the Norfolk? Was the Norfolk anywhere near that? Did you see?
Yeah, we were then about 6 or 7 miles or more away when the Hood was blown up. But we were near enough to get a sort of good view of the Prince of Wales. As soon as the Hood had disappeared, the Prince of Wales turned away, and she was laying a big smoke screen from her two funnels, and she reminded me of a destroyer. She was passing so close and so fast. I mean, we could see everything on board, but we didn't realize that she was in trouble like she was. We knew we had sent a signal, and we'd had a signal back saying that they'd had some heavy casualties on the bridge, but we didn't know to what extent. And it was only later, some time later, that I read that in fact the captain and the chief yeoman of signals on the Prince of Wales were the only two still standing. The others were either killed or badly injured on the Prince of Wales. And of course this was what I suppose what caused the questions later from the Admiralty about why she had withdrawn. I mean, our newest battleship virtually running away or appearing to run away. I mean, I know enough about the Navy to realise that no battleship could go into action when they just had everybody on the bridge knocked out, so to speak. You've got to have some people there to run the ship.
Did you see the Hood go down?
No, I didn't, because I was on the other side. I was on the blind side, as it were. I knew she'd gone down because the other signalmen were shouting this or that. I can't remember exactly what they said. But I went, when I got over there, I didn't really see anything of the hood. I had seen the two ships coming towards, and I didn't see any of the signal which they were supposed to be executing to turn away. But I was on the other side, you see. The senior signalman had sent me over there.
Did you hear the battle?
Well, with the hood, no. No, I think we may have heard the sound of gunfire in the distance, but we didn't hear any explosions on board or anything. I did look at one stage, and saw, I went over to the other side and saw that the hood had a big fire, but it appeared to me that the fire was on the side where we were, and it appeared to me to be from about the bridge towards the back end of the ship. But we weren't close enough to really observe in any detail. The people who were on that side and on the bridge of the Norfolk probably saw a lot more than I did.
But you actually saw the hood after it had been struck or hit?
Yeah, I saw that she was on fire. But as I say, she was only on fire for a very short time. It must have been because she came into the situation of opening. I think the hood opened fire first, if I remember rightly. I don't know. But it didn't last terribly long.
How did the news of the hood, sinking of the hood, affect morale on the Norfolk?
Well, we were all in a state of complete shock. We had a crew member on board who had a son on there. And a number of my class who had trained with me were on the hood. I didn't know that until after. But I think we were all in a sort of state of shock to think that our largest ship had just blown up. And straight away, our newest battleship was getting away from the scene. We couldn't really believe it. But these things really become reality after a short time.
Did you have any other contact with Prince of Wales?
Yes. I had signaled to the Prince of Wales before when she was in Scapa Flow. I don't know about that then particularly.
I was talking about.
I don't think we only exchanged about one or two signals with the Prince of Wales at that time. Later there were signals made because she was sent ahead of the Norfolk after that event, and she stayed ahead for some time. But I was only one of a number on the flag deck. When we were at action station, there would have been about six or seven signalmen there, I would imagine. And me being the junior boy.
Being, as you said, the runner for the Admiral's flag lieutenant, were you perhaps in a better position than a lot of people to realise what was going on?
Well, I was in a good position to realise what was likely to happen because I had seen a number of the intelligence reports, the signals that were handed to me in a sealed envelope were given back to me in an open envelope, and I was told to put them in a certain place in the flag lieutenant's cabin. And human nature being what it is, I had a look at lots of them. I didn't understand a lot of them, but when there was something saying that the Deutschland was loading torpedoes at Kiel or something like that, that sort of information became available by right or by accident.
During this time, during the Battle of the Denmark Straits, were you in the presence of the admiral or the captain?
Well, yeah, I was often on the bridge. I didn't live on the bridge, as it were, but I often went on the bridge to hand signals to the flag lieutenant. He would then immediately show them to the admiral. I'd be waiting there while this was done, and he probably would give them back to me and take them down to his cabin. But I didn't actually, my action station was mainly, sometimes it was on the bridge, as the flag lieutenant would say, wait here, and then I'd be there for some time. But normally my action station was dealing with signals on the signal deck.
What I'm trying to get at is, did you have any insight, or did you see these people in operation during the battle, and what were they like?
I don't think so, no. I did, when the incident of the shelling by Bismarck of Norfolk, I was on the signal deck on the starboard side then. I didn't see any of the people on the bridge at all at that time. It was all over in a very short time.
But during this whole incident when the Norfolk was in pursuit of Bismarck?
Yes,
did you observe the captain or the admiral?
Yeah, I think I would have seen them several times, but I couldn't say there was anything untoward. Admirals and captains are very calm people. They never ever show their feelings.
I just wondered if you remembered anything in particular.
No. I remembered that the admiral was a very sort of nice chappy when he came out of his sea cabin, which was on the signal deck level. He always said good morning to the signalman, always spoke to us. Or if he went there, he always would say good night. But, I mean, these people don't converse with you unless they have something to say.
Do you remember anything else about the pursuit of the Bismarck?
Well, yes, there's plenty to remember, really. It was an occasion when, as I say, we were at the action station for a lot of the time. The speed of the ship was quite excessive, and the vibrations there, and then of course there were occasions like when the Victoria sent, on the evening that the Hood was sunk, they sent, I think it was two flights of Swordfish planes looking for the Bismarck. I remember signalling to them, they couldn't find the Bismarck, and all we had to do was to send the bearing and distance of the ship from where we were. And I was amazed then that planes could receive visual signals. I'd not realised that. I didn't realise that they were competent to do that.
And how did you send signals to the Swordfish?
By
which means did you send?
By Aldous lantern. Yeah, by an Aldous lantern. Because it was getting dark, you see. We used to have red shades on the Aldous lantern. And that's what we used to signal them. Of course, with an Aldous lantern, you've got to keep it firmly trained on the thing. It's not quite so easy when it's a plane flying close to you. But, yes, I remember thinking, you know, how brave these people were to fly with a huge torpedo. The plane didn't look as though it was fit to fly, let alone attack anything. But it was a long chase, as I remember, and I think it was the following night the Bismarck disappeared. She wasn't the only one that disappeared. The Suffolk disappeared. We never saw her again. I believe she went to Newfoundland or someone. The Prince Eugen disappeared, and we had lost touch with the Bismarck. She had done a 180-degree turn in the night, and we had done the same, but a little way away. Anyway, we did finally get it. All the time we were going in the right direction, apparently, because on the last day we were the first ship to make contact with the Bismarck. But despite all the ships that were involved from start to finish, there were only two ships that were in the chase from start to finish. One was the Bismarck and one was the Norfolk. And I can't believe to this day how miraculous it was, because all she had to do was to turn and fire at Norfolk and Suffolk, and it would have been a different story. But apparently, when one reads the various accounts, their operational orders were to the effect that they were to avoid action at all costs. They must get out in the open sea.
Tell me about that last day.
Well, the last day, it was very rough, very rough. The sun was shining, glorious day. Very rough it was. And we knew that the Bismarck was disabled. She wasn't able to steer. She was steering actually towards us when we met her. And we were going southeast. She was actually coming up towards us. And we got a message from the bridge saying, answer the Rodney on the starboard bow. And the signalman, or leading signalman he was, went to flash to what was supposed to be the Rodney, and it was the Bismarck. And she was then about just over eight or nine miles away, which is no distance for a ship like that. Fortunately for us, she didn't fire on us. But I see in the report that was written by the German survivor, the book, he refers to that point when we met up with him on the, our old friend, he said, from the Denmark Strait. Well, then we turned away for a while, and very shortly we saw the Rodney and King George V coming towards us. And then we closed in on the Bismarck, and from what was seen to be ridiculously short distances, she was fired on. Well, we fired on the Bismarck. I think the closest we got to was about 2.5 miles at one stage. And the Rodney came between us and the Bismarck, and she was firing her 16-inch guns. I was watching the Rodney because I was fascinated by watching what she was firing. I couldn't see too much of what was happening at the other end, except there was a number of fires appearing on the Bismarck, and her guns were silent. And the thought went through my mind, why do we have to continue shooting like this? It's obvious that the ship was never going to get back to harbour. But of course, I suppose they had to make sure she sank in case she did get towed back or something. Although King George V was shooting, I didn't actually watch the King George V at all. But this went on for a long time. We opened fire, I think, about 8:30. And it was gone 10 o'clock before we ceased firing. And I think Norfolk is credited with having fired 597 shells during that final action. And altogether, I believe there were nearly 3,000 shells fired, all to destroy one ship.
So you saw the Bismarck on fire?
Oh yeah, I saw the Bismarck. She had a lot of fires. She wasn't going up in flames, as it were, but there were fires all over the ship, you could see. In fact, I was surprised that we could see so many, but obviously we must have been seeing the red glow through the holes, because she apparently had a lot of holes, so the reports say. Didn't know that at the time, of course.
Did you see what happened after that?
Well, we had already used our torpedoes. We'd fired 8 torpedoes, 4 each side. And I don't know that we really hit the Bismarck. It was said that one of our torpedoes had hit, but I don't know whether that's true or not. But the only ship left with torpedoes there was the Dorsetshire, so she was given the job of torpedoing the Bismarck on both sides. And I don't remember seeing a signal telling us to retire or anything. I know that the King George V took Rodney under command, and they went off in one direction, and we went off in a slightly different direction because our paravanes had been damaged when we were off Iceland in the ice floes and that. And so we couldn't go up through the Irish Sea. We had to go outside of the Irish Sea, which was fortunate in a way, because the German plane that came over, we only had one came to bomb us. The rest all bombed the ships going up the Irish Sea. We were lucky.